Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, it was a Twitter pro who plays some golf who rolled in DC. He's getting real hot. We break down all the action from the Wells Fargo, plus a little bit of LIV Tour Saudi golf gossip that we are definitely not above, so we dive into that as well. We're tuned into a finale close call and painting, plus this week's guest, that's right, Grammy Award winning Pat Monahan, the frontman for the legendary group Train, talking new music, hits, his golf game, and great stories from his time in music and on the course. Plus everything with the NBA playoffs, fast food, and a life announcement when we always end with food. All of it brought to you by our friends at Desert Fox Golf. I love seeing that trendy Fox logo on the golf course. It's an eye-turner for sure. It's the phone caddy from Desert Fox Golf. Check it out at desertfoxgolf.com. We talk about it every week because we love it. It's where our phone goes when we play golf. So that's really all you need to know. You need to check out the colors, variety, and really cool patterns that you can customize on your own phone caddy as well. So check out desertfoxgolf.com. Our promo code is COURSEOFLIFE to save 10%. Again, promo code COURSEOFLIFE to save 10% at desertfoxgolf.com.
Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Tosi Snacks, and Volvic. I am Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, it was the Wells Fargo Championship, not in its usual home because it's taking a break as Quail Hollow prepares for the President's Cup. Instead, it was just outside of our nation's capital at TPC Potomac, where everyone who slept on a lead decided they didn't actually want to keep it, as Jason Day did it on Saturday when he put up his 79, and then Keegan Bradley did it on Saturday with a 72. And so it turned out to be a Twitter user who occasionally plays some golf, putting up a 68 to win by two strokes. Max Homa claims the Wells Fargo.
Yeah, and very impressive style. Max Homa, kind of, you know, not really a prolific winner. He's got four wins under his belt now. That's an impressive tally, but a prolific closer. He's got some insane stats now about when he gets in contention in the top 10, he closes and gets it done with these recent wins in the last few years. And yeah, it was a very fluctuated leaderboard, to say the least. Also, some notably crappy conditions all week didn't help that as well. So that's why the winning total was just at 8 under par for the week. Mike, I think at one point on Saturday, a high temperature of like 49 degrees in rain there for the Wells Fargo. Not necessarily the May forecast they would have liked to drawn up, but it did make for some drama, that's for sure.
Yeah, it did indeed. And so it resulted in quite a fun couple rounds of golf. And we were, of course, both all in on Keegan Bradley, who we know grew up in Vermont, grew up in cold weather, knows what it's like. We have this connection with Keegan. We should try to get him on the podcast. Maybe you can leverage that with your experience playing against his team back when you were in school.
I did quite technically against Keegan Bradley some 18 years ago. That's right.
Not that we're dating
ourselves.
Our lives
have gone in different directions, unfortunately.
Very much so. So we both had Keegan Bradley in our picks, and we're rooting for him, but just didn't seem to happen.
Had him at 35-1. You're at MWRINC on Twitter, and I'm at Course of Life One, where we do our weekly picks on Wednesday evenings. We both like him just because he's been in great form. He's been chasing these leaderboards for what seems like the last 3 or 4 months now. He's found a way to pop like once every 30 days. And we thought we had that moment again, holding the lead on Sunday. But just a couple of costly misses late, and obviously hitting in a hazard right in the back nine screwed his chances. And Homa, like I said, the closer when he needs to be. He's improved his ball striking dramatically, and he's now a guy. I mean, he's a guy you got to watch out for. The big key, which I know you're already going to ask me, so I'm going to get ahead of it, is major championships with Max Homa. He's done absolutely nothing in the way of high finishes and major championships. He needs to turn that around if we're really going to consider him as a top-tier player on the tour.
I actually wasn't going to ask about that at all, It was more going to be, is he going to be tweeting come the weekend at a major? Or is he going to be playing come the weekend at a major? Maybe
I saw some interviews already this week at post win where he said that he's on Twitter on Sunday morning. Like he sees it all. Like that's what I appreciate about Max is he genuinely is just on there all the time. He's a loser just like all of us on Twitter all day and night, just wondering what the world thinks about him. So he lets it all seep in. So I appreciate that. There's no filter with Max, and he's definitely a great follow if you're not following him already on social. So he's going to take it all in. He's ready for the fire, and we'll see if he can keep the game rolling in at Southern Hills next week.
And just to clarify, Max Homa is not a loser like the rest of us. He's a four-time winner on the PGA Tour, including now, thanks to this weekend, a two-time winner at the Wells Fargo. So
he likes it. He likes that event, no matter where it is. He did one at Quail Hollow and one here at TPC Potomac.
Let's also talk about something else that happened at TPC Potomac, and that was with Sergio Garcia.
Little bit of a tirade, little lost temper moment from Sergio. Oh, Sergio Garcia losing a temper? No, that doesn't sound like him at all.
That doesn't sound right. No, but he, ball in the brush in this, whatever area we're going to call that, in a marshy area. Rules snafu about when the clock started for him looking at the ball. Yep. And when he's told that he's off, that he's gone over on the clock and his time is up, he said, I can't wait to get out of here and get off this tour.
Off this tour, literally, word for word. Shout out to the PGA Tour Live hot mics for catching that up, catching that audio when we need it the most. A couple more weeks, he said, just a couple more weeks. So is he directly, and I know he didn't want the world to hear this, I'm sure he enjoyed muttering it to the rules official, but I'm sure he didn't want the world to hear this, but we're basically unofficially adding Sergio to the Saudi list. The list is very short, by the way. I've started the list as a running joke on Twitter, and it's basically just guys who I am at least 99% convinced are going to be playing in these Saudi tour events starting in the summer. So far, the list is Phil Mickelson, Jason Kokrak, Sergio Garcia, Robert Garrigues. So I got four names right now that are absolutely
Lee Westwood
confirmed.
Is going. We know Lee Westwood's going
right,
too.
Maybe five. Okay.
I saw this on Twitter too. This brings up the other thing. We were talking about these guys have done so much for the tour and gotten so much winnings from the tour, like Phil Mickelson, like Sergio. And like, why are they bailing on the tour to go somewhere that's backed by big oil and,
people that maybe do very questionable things to human beings? Yeah.
No, they don't questionably do it. They do it. They kill people because they don't like them and they don't like what they're saying. That's what they do over there. It's like, why are these guys doing this? And it was this interesting take of because you think you constantly deserve more than what you're already getting. And then it's not about giving back so much. It's about taking and taking more. And there are guys like that. A lot of millionaires and billionaires out there just want more. And that's, it's unfortunate that some of these guys are in that group. And I can't wait to read more about Phil Mickelson and how he's such a bully. As well. So
couple that with a little desperation too. Sergio, Westwood, Phil, these are guys that are in the twilight of their career. They see the opportunity for at least one more, if not several more gigantic paydays. And they're looking past all the other stuff and all the other noise that's in front of this decision. So this drama just grows as we get closer to official tournament start dates in June and July. We got the list at five right now. We'll be keeping track on Twitter here as the weeks go on to see who actually tees it up in these new tour events.
Let's talk about this coming weekend. It's the tune-up for the second major of the year. It is the Byron Nelson, the AT&T Byron Nelson. And man, what a loaded field as these guys try to get ready. Scottie Scheffler, Justin Thomas, Xander Schauffele, Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson, Will Zalatoris, Hideki Matsuyama, Brooks Koepka. Seven of the top 15 are in this field.
Yeah, so what gives, Mike? Because, when you and I were younger golf fans, the mode, and we learned this from a guy named Tiger Woods, the mode, modus operandi, was always take the week off before the major. Play 2 weeks before the major, take the week off before the major, you know, get there nice and early and rested and ready to go, and you have the whole week in front of you. It seems like a lot of the newer, younger, stronger, faster, in better shape guys are just completely quelling that, and they're totally down playing the week before, especially when they're just going Texas to Oklahoma. I think that maybe makes it a little bit more reasonable as well.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of the travel aspect as part of it where they wanted to go quite as far. And I think maybe the guys just didn't want to go to a place like TPC Potomac. Like we said last week, that course had a reputation for not being particularly easy. Even though we know they've made changes to it, to that, I wonder if that was also part of it, where they just didn't want to go there for whatever reason for that.
Yeah, so nonetheless, it gets a pretty good field for Byron Nelson, which is usually not the greatest field. The course has changed a few times over the years. You remember when I used to visit you back when you were living in Texas, they were at TPC Las Colinas there, right in Arlington, Irving area. Then they moved over to Trinity Forest, and now they're here at TPC Craig Ranch in McKinney. So they're hopping all over the DFW, but the bottom line is this is the second year at this new course. So we'll see if the birdies are flying, just like they were last year.
And we'll have our full picks up on Twitter on Wednesday evening. He's at Course of Life. Alex, I'm at MWRINC.
That's right.
Let's switch over to Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. This weekend for me, Alex, I spent time sitting on the couch watching my wife paint the walls. And wow. I don't want this to sound like I wasn't helping. I gave great moral support. But
did
I have
you
not.
Did you literally watch the paint dry this weekend?
Not all weekend, but I did not do a lot of helping on the paint department because I am not. You don't want me painting walls. You don't want me doing that. I'm
so
not good at
supervising
it.
The project, it sounds like.
No, I wasn't supervising. I, you know, the wife's in charge, not me.
I was there for moral support.
Yeah.
He offered nothing, basically, is what it sounds like. But did the walls get done correctly is the bottom line.
Well, most of the walls. So we're redoing. The wife's decided for the summer she's going to repaint the entire downstairs, pretty much, which is, you know, one continuous wall because it is a lot of walls to paint. So she did. She's done about maybe a third of the downstairs down. So.
Does she need you for a reach at all? I mean, are you ever going to have to paint
a little bit? I did have to help because we were doing the kitchen. So I had to reach to get on top, you know, the little bit of wall on top of the counters or above the cabinets, because that area, the cabinets don't go all the way to the ceiling. So there is a little bit there. So my reach came in handy there. And we do have a tray ceiling in a couple spots, so I'm going to need to get up on the ladder and do those spots.
Yeah, you're going to be called off the bench, so just stay warm and ready. Your number will be called. Best of luck with the rest of the project there.
Thank you.
My Tuned In was pretty basic. It was a follow-up to a conversation a few weeks back that we had where there was an atrocity committed on the Food Network Spring Baking Championship. You remember, Mike, they brought back a contestant that was previously eliminated just because they felt bad and they just wanted to bring her back. It just completely messed with the traditionalism of any sort of elimination or any sort of competition baking series that you and I love. Fortunately, I'm here to report that Carolyn, who got back on the show, did not win the entire competition. She did make it to the finale. So I was getting scared there, thinking they might actually do this and give her the championship. But alas, she didn't win the championship. So we avoided a bit of a TV catastrophe there. But nonetheless, a decent end to Spring Baking Championship, just to a very strange set of circumstances indeed.
I mean, it's just odd. The whole situation is odd for sure.
If we can't be holding our word on who's eliminated from a baking competition series, how are we supposed to last as a society? That's the question I'll leave you with.
We live in a society.
Exactly.
As George would say. Yes. So there you go. There's our Seinfeld reference for the day. All right. Let's get into this week's guest. Alex, we grew up in the music of the 90s and the early 2000s. This was what gave us our purpose in our music life. This is what we remember the most.
The golden era.
And this week's guest is 3 years in the making, arguably 7 years in the making if we include some time that we did this show back in college when it was called something else entirely. And so I think we've hit the pinnacle here. And so we have on the front man of the Grammy and multi-platinum recording band Train on, Pat Monahan.
Unbelievable. What a strange sentence for you to be uttering here in the year 2022. Pat Monahan is on Course of Life, like yours and my podcast right now at this moment. We've been playing Trains music on our college radio show. Going back 15 years. I've had their music and been playing it forever. I'm a kid of the 90s, and I grew up, remember the moment that Meet Virginia blasted onto the scene. And from there, you know all the hits. And we run through all of them. An amazing career in music. Also, a fun time talking golf with Pat as well, too.
We'll get into this whole really entertaining conversation with Pat Monahan from Train in just a moment. But first, let's talk about our favorite golf balls out there on the course. And those are the Volvic XT Soft and Vivid. These are those bright, colorful golf balls that give you less spin off the driver for straighter tee shots, more feel around the greens for lower scores, and just something other than a boring white ball. So you're going to have more fun out there because it's not a boring white ball. It's got color.
Yeah, I know. And I appreciate the predictability of the flight too with these Volvic balls, especially the XT Soft. So you can try that one or the Vivid as well too, if you really want to flex and get your rainbow fashion statements out on the golf course. I'd say the Vivid is for you as well.
It is indeed. And Volvic has even more than just these colorful golf balls. They've got merchandise, towels, accessories for the course. They've got some cool collectibles as well. They got some superhero golf balls, so you can really show just how super duper you are out there in all these different ways. Volvic doesn't spend all their money on getting big tour players to market their balls. Instead, they pay pennies on the dollar for guys like us. But hey, that's okay because they make a pretty awesome golf ball. So if you want performance in color, go on over and check out their website, volvic.com. They have a ball for every swing.
Next up on the tee, we've got an avid golfer who does a little bit of music as well. I feel like I've known him and his voice forever because he's been playing on radios and playlists for over two decades now as the lead singer of the band Train. He's traveled the globe with them, back out on tour, and he's joining us here on The Course of Life. It's Pat Monahan joining. Pat, how is everything where you are?
Great, Alex. Everything's really good. How about you?
It's great. Yeah, I'm here in Austin, Texas. I've seen you once before going on almost two decades ago in Boston, Massachusetts, where I grew up. And I'm looking forward to seeing you out on tour this summer with Blues Traveler and Jewel. It's AM Gold, the new album coming out on May 20th, the 11th studio album. You know, you've been in the pop culture lexicon for a while, both yourself and the band. From a band and group perspective, what is it that keeps you guys going after all these years?
You know, really, I think it's a longing to be in the mix still, you know, whether it's being relevant or being competitive, you know, like watching golf helps me musically understand that, you know, one of my dear friends is Jason Day and, you know, never count a guy out. And, you know, it's the same thing with music. Like you never know when, like Jason Kokrak is also a friend. You never know when all of a sudden your song is the hit song. You know, you never know when that moment is coming.
Yeah, very well said. And those guys have had their own hits as well, too. That's very neat. And we'll get into those connections. I want to hear a lot about that. In terms of the music yourself, I've known you for the better part of two decades, like I mentioned. I'm coming from the Casey Kasem Toll Request Live era, where you popped onto the scene with Meet Virginia. Did you envision that as being your breakout hit with funky lyrics like Daddy's Wrestling Alligators and Mama Working on Carburetors? How was that moment for you being thrust into the spotlight when that happened?
Well, I don't know how old your listeners are, Alex, but one of my biggest inspirations lyrically was a guy called Johnny Mercer. He wrote a song called Moon River. So for your older gentlemen and ladies out there listening, they might know Johnny Mercer and his music. But I think that his inspiring lyrics really helped me kind of forge away with my own thing, like Untrimmed Chest in Soul Sister. But those are actually the things that make me who I am. And I try to fight against it. It's kind of like, you know, I hate to keep using golf references, but, you know, Daniel Berger's swing, you know, or Matt Wolf's swing. I mean, like if you try to change it, then maybe he's not he's not a tour player anymore.
No, you, Pat, you've been swinging your swing for sure. And it's been working. So
yeah, swinging my swing.
Love that. And typically, I'm curious from a songwriting perspective, is it always kind of similar states of mind or mindsets where you are writing hits, or do they come from all different walks of life and places or trains of thought?
Well, you know, with this new AM Gold album, one of my closest fans asked me if I was going to keep writing happy songs because they were all happy for me that I'm living a happy life. But they were like, maybe we could get back to some of those older Train lyrics when you weren't so happy. And so I wanted to revisit that on this new record. And so this is kind of a throwback album lyrically and also sonically.
Interesting. So we are kind of getting back into the more of that deeper emotion from Train past. I love that. In terms of the positive uplifting version, Hey Soul Sister specifically was just one of those songs that you just heard the opening riff and it just made you want to smile. Is that an example of something that came from, you know, the happiness in your life and kind of the opposite of what we're going to hear on AM Gold?
Yeah, it's not the opposite. There are joyful songs, but in a sense of the whole album, it's everything. It's in fact, there's a song on it called It's Everything, but it's every variety of emotion where I like, you know, I've always thought of Train as like a romantic comedy. I don't want you to listen to an album and have one feeling. You know, Pink Floyd's one of my favorite bands, and so I love AC/DC, but there's one thing you're going to feel throughout the whole thing. With Train, I want you to laugh a little bit. I want there to be some tears in your eyes. And when you come and see a Train concert, I want you to feel, you know, the human part of who you are and in a live setting. I think that's an important part of being an entertainer, too, is having a variety of things to say in a song.
Definitely. The range of emotion in a live music performance, too. Nothing like it. I can appreciate that. Again, it's Pat Monahan with Train. AM Gold's the album, May 20th. I'm curious, as everything came together and the whole world of music really learned how to record differently, I'm curious what the communication was like recording music in the last couple of years for you. You're during COVID. We all kind of had to learn a little bit of a new way in all walks of business. How did that work in terms of, you know, creating inspiration to write new music with everything going on in the world?
Well, it wasn't easy because I started making a record, you know, 3.5 years ago, and I was flying to LA and writing with people that, you know, are heavy hitter writers. And I really loved the songs, but there was something missing. And that something I think was me, where I have a tendency when I work with people to try to, you know, voyeuristically be more like the other person. Even if I'm writing all the words and the melodies, I'm trying to do it. Like, I've worked with one of my favorite writers of all time. His name is Rafael Sadiq. And I wanted to impress him so much that we didn't write anything great because I wasn't being myself. And so then when COVID locked everything down and I couldn't do that anymore, I started to just write with two guys in my band, Jerry Becker and Matt Musty. And those guys, they wanted me to be me. And that was when we started to write songs that were much, much better and much more for people who love what Train does.
That's awesome. Very well put. And it was neat to hear that you got right back to your core with the bandmates when you're writing this most recent progress. I'm curious, in terms of ideas, you say that they kind of come from all over in different spots of your life, but do any ideas musically ever come to you on the golf course? Is there ever a moment where you find yourself texting lyrics in your phone or humming a melody or something along those lines while you're playing?
Yeah, there's one particular song on this album. It's called Betting on Me. So your golfer friends will probably know what the game of Wolf is.
Oh, yes. Yes. Big fans.
And so we're playing Wolf and have a good friend named Sidney Rice, who was he was on the Seahawks for years. He's a tremendous athlete. And so we were golfing and it was Sidney's turn to be the Wolf. And he hit a great drive and then never picked anybody else. And I was like, Sid, you the lone wolf? And he said, I'm betting on me. And so I wrote a song called Betting on Me and gave him some writing credit on it because that inspired me.
Yeah, the ultimate move of confidence there. That reminds me of the Justin Thomas Tiger Woods celebration, the I love me some me Terrell Owens celebration at the President's Cup too, you know?
I love me some me.
Love it. Yeah, I mean, I would count on a former NFL athlete to bet on himself as well. What was the result? Did betting on me work there for Sydney?
It did. You know, unfortunately, Sydney took $500 from me that day, and he still talks about it.
I'm sure.
I think
he
we're
does.
Probably we're probably even at this point. I think in the game of golf, there was one friend of mine who said he actually kept track all year of the money earned and lost, and he said, you know, every year we all pretty much break even.
Yeah, that sounds about right. More power to him for actually keeping track too. That's a dangerous game of math to play.
It's a dangerous thing, I know.
So you've been taking it seriously the last several years, it sounds like. I know the game can kind of beat us all up in different ways, but we'll stay positive. I'm curious, where's kind of the progress with your golf game? What are you enjoying most about playing these days?
I think the thing that I've improved on the most is the thing I was weakest at, and that is putting. I've tried every putter you could think of. As I mentioned, Jason Day earlier, he came to a show once and we had known each other a little while. And he said, "Hey, is there anything you need?" Because I was in Ohio where he lives. And I said, "Yeah, I would love a putter that works." And so he brought me one of his putters and it worked for a little while, but I just couldn't figure it out. But some friends of mine in a band called OAR, they gifted me at the end of a tour, a Scotty Cameron putter. And I ended up meeting Scotty and hanging out with him for an evening. And so I started using it, but a dear friend of mine here who is, he played at UW, he played UW golf. He uses the claw and I never tried it. And I started trying the claw and it fixed all of the broken bits about my putting.
Interesting. I haven't ventured that far down to the claw, but you're a preacher?
Oh, no, I'm not a preacher. I don't know how anybody's supposed to do anything. I mean, watching Spieth putt, you know, just in a traditional grip. And then, you know, Jason Kokrak, he has the crossover grip. And then there's guys who do the, you know, the forward press, and that doesn't work for me. I've tried everything you could think of and yipped away, but I think the claw is definitely working for me.
Okay. All right. Good to know. Maybe worth a venture sometime for a golfer out there that's needing a little help on the greens. In terms of touring and golf, I'm sure you got out there a lot with the OAR guys. I know they play. What's that like for you? What sort of regularity can you get out to courses at city stops? How often can you make that a part of your schedule?
Well, most tours, the only guy that'll play golf with me all the time is my bus driver. He's from Butler County, Pennsylvania. Or from Butler, Pennsylvania, and I'm from Erie originally. And so we talk Steelers and have a couple glasses of wine out there and have the best time ever. And then once in a while, you'll go out with a band like AOR who actually play golf. And they actually got me into a great boxing routine that I did for many years until I tore my rotator cuff doing it. And so I need to sue those guys for the damages as well.
Yes, you do. That can get dangerous there. I'm curious.
If there's a lawyer listening, I would love some representation to sue some dear friends of mine.
Yeah, no offense, but offense, right? Love it. Hey, one course I got to ask about, because I know you spent a lot of time there. We have to talk about Pebble Beach and specifically AT&T Week. I know you've not only played there, but you've also played there. So tell me, first off, who are the pro or pros you've had an opportunity to play in the Pro-Am tournament with?
I've made really good friends because of the AT&T. I find that most of my dear friends are through golf. I started to really take golf seriously about 7 years ago. And by seriously, I mean, you know, being a 15 handicap and trying to like really turn it into something. And I'm an 8. I've been a 7. It fluctuates. But my goal is to be a 5 or below. But then I wouldn't be as valuable to somebody in a tournament. But being an 8 was at least I'm single digits and trying to figure out how to continue to go forward. But I made great friends with Ricky Barnes and Chris Stroud. And, you know, there are guys that I've golfed with in the COVID AT&T where we played 9 holes with each guy. And that was Adam Long and Jason Day. Jason Kokrak was with me. He played with Harris Barton, who was a 49er, and I played with a guy called Zach Blair, and Jason Kokrak and I just really hit it off great and ended up being really good friends.
Yeah, he's a PGA Tour winner now. He's been flirted around the Saudi Golf League upcoming. There's a lot of buzz around Kokrak indeed. I mean, what's the kind of thing you take away from a game like Jason's when you get to watch him up close?
Well, he hit, we were at the Monterey Peninsula Golf Club, and he was in a bunker, and he had a tree above him. So he was in kind of a bunker with a pretty good lip in front of him. You know, it was still about 15 yards in front of him, but it was a high lip. And above that was a tree. So he had about maybe 10 yards between the lip and the tree, and he had to get 175 yards. And I was just like, dude, I'm dead. If that's me, I got no chance. And he hit the most beautiful 7-iron that came out low, maybe about 3 yards above the lip. And it didn't really go high until it passed the tree. And then it lifted up. I don't know how he did the shot. He ended up 3 feet from the pin. And I just looked at him like, this guy is so special. I've seen, you know, I've become friends with like Kevin Streelman. There's such wonderful people out there playing golf that inspire me. But some of those shots are just hard to like comprehend. It's such a different level.
Yeah, they have that amazing ability to hit that shot. You're right. You describe it. It goes low and somehow it also flies high. And I don't know how it does.
I don't know how that happened. Yes. I don't think he would be able to help me with it either.
No, he definitely would not. I got to ask about one more great, obviously the one who just made a return. I know back in the day you had an opportunity to play the Tiger Jam for Tiger Woods, his charity event there.
Yeah.
And it was cool seeing that. How much was that, a one-time gig, or did you guys play that several years ongoing, I believe?
We did the Tiger Jam, I don't know, 20 years ago, and we played right before Don Henley. And I don't think Don Henley cares about golf. I don't really know, but I'm a big Eagles fan. I just saw them recently live and they were still amazing. But recently, it was about maybe 3 years ago, a band canceled Tiger Jam, and a friend of mine, Rob Light, who is at CAA Entertainment, he is on the board of Tiger Jam, and he called and said, hey, you know, would you consider playing Tiger Jam? I was like, man, I am in the middle of a tour. I mean, that's a day off for me, but I don't get many days off. And he was like, what if Tiger gives you a lesson? And I said, I'll be there about 4 hours early. And so it was in Vegas, and Tiger gave me an hour-long lesson on a driving range. And he was trying the new, I think it was before the sim. It was an M5 5-wood, and we were at Shadow Creek, and he was hitting 303 yards with a 5-wood, and I was just so blown away with everything about this guy, especially his communication. Like, he's so fun, and I mean, you just want to be best friends with the guy. And then he hits the golf ball like, you know, nobody else has ever done it.
It really is surreal. And obviously everything that happened with him in the last couple of years of his life just made this most recent return even more unbelievable.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts on everything you saw at Augusta? I felt like I was watching an old movie on replay, but yet it was brand new to us at the same time. It was amazing.
Well, you know, I don't know Cam Smith, but I'm a big fan of him. So I really was really gunning for him. And Scotty Scheffler seems like an amazing kid. But I know Cam's agent. And so I was really rooting for him and watching Tiger peripherally because, you know, he's the GOAT. And I just was feeling so badly for him the last day, watching how really he put his body, as he always does, through, you know, the ringer. And then seeing him interviewed afterwards, someone brought to my attention how different he was, how, you know, he was like 11 over and he was happier than he's ever been in any post interview that anyone's ever seen, because he was like, I follow all the memes, the PGA stuff. And one of them was, 18 months ago, this guy's shopping for prosthetic legs, and now he's, he makes the cut. He beats 60% of the field at the Masters. Like, he's not like anyone else. So I was happy to see how happy he was, but I was sad to see him like limping the last day. Like, he really put himself through a lot.
Yeah, he definitely put himself through the ringer, but just seeing the 4 days and getting the Sunday red was definitely a sight indeed. Let's wrap up with a little 2-minute drill and some AM gold quick shots here with Pat Monahan from Train. Want to start off with a track on the track list I'm intrigued by. It's Turn the Radio Up featuring Jewel. I'm imagining we're going to get some sort of collab on the road. Or are we going to be able to perform that song at shows throughout the tour?
Yep, that's the goal. I'm on one of her songs on her album called Dancing Slow, and then she's on Turn the Radio Up. I've also known John Popper for many years, so I'm hoping John will come out and play harmonica on some stuff. But my goal as a headliner is always to bring camaraderie to stage. I think that's what every ticket buyer wants. That's what I would want. And this will be authentic. You know, these are real friendships.
Love that. Looking forward to seeing it live in Austin here. New single question from me. Talking about AM Gold, I want you to just quickly explain the concept of AM Gold, mainly to that younger audience we were talking to at the top, that this is not a song about the morning, correct?
No. This is AM radio before cell phones or anything. This is how people got their hits. And AM Gold was a collection of songs that were hits on AM radio before even FM became a thing. And they were amazing songs. I mean, you know, it was like when yacht rock began, and it was singer-songwriters and also R&B and disco. And this is kind of the album sounds like one of those compilations. And the song, AM Gold, is kind of the disco part of it. And, you know, it's a self-love song, which every generation needs more of. And especially if you're a golfer, because, man, how many shots do you just go like, I'm terrible? This is a song about self-love. It's an album about every emotion you could have. And I think people feel that throwback sound, and it'll sound great live.
Definitely. Let's get a little bit hypothetical real quick. If AM Gold were a golf course, what would it be?
The album?
Yeah.
Wow. That's an interesting question. There's so many courses I have not played. I would love to say it's Cypress Point, but that's a pretty big deal. Maybe, you know what it might be? This golf course might be, I don't know why it's, I've played it one time in Pittsburgh, and I don't know why I'm not, yes, this record is Oakmont.
Okay. All right. We're in for it then. I like that. Oakmont it is. Yep. AM Gold. Cool. And AM Gold, it's one letter away from AM Golf, which brings up the question, do you prefer being a dew sweeper and playing golf first thing in the morning, or do you like twilight golf as the sun sets?
You know, I used to be a dew sweeper, and I would get out there, you know, and wonder why they wouldn't open the gates at 6 and they waited till 7. But I think now I'm a 10 o'clock guy. I like to be out there at 10 o'clock. Be home to pick up my kids from school, and it's the perfect timing for me.
That's right, Pat. You can afford those 10 a.m. tee times. Go for it, my man. I love it. We always wrap with our 19th hole question presented by our friends at Lynx Drinks. The question, Pat, is when you get into your favorite clubhouse in the 19th hole, our favorite hole where we always perform the best, what's your go-to order and your favorite meal and drink to order?
My always order is a glass of champagne. It has to be French, real champagne, not Prosecco or anything. It's just the perfect way to, even if you're on the golf course and you have a bottle of champagne, you just look like you know what you're doing. And then depending on the clubhouse, you know, I don't need a lot of food, like a half a turkey sandwich with a salad sounds good to me.
Fair enough. I love it. Pat, thank you so much for joining the Course of Life. Can't wait to hear you live in Austin, Texas, and looking forward to everything that follows the release of AM Gold. Cheers.
Cheers. Thanks, Alex.
And we're back. Great conversation there with Grammy-winning and multi-platinum recording artist Pat Monahan from Train. That's awesome. Just a crazy sentence to say on the Course of Life podcast is that we get to say. And I think that's really cool that he's saying that their new album, AM Gold, out May 20th, is Oakmont Country Club.
Yes, what a great question. Thanks for the assist there to you and the wife. I had to ask that, and I'm glad I came to memory with Oakmont, a classic U.S. Open venue. So this is a real true test for the music fans right there. It's staunch, full of material, I'd say, is AM Gold, the album, like you mentioned, May 20th coming out. And yeah, hopefully I'll get to see Pat in action. The tour's coming to Austin. You got to check where it is in Georgia, but this summer we're going to be on the road with Jewel and Blues Traveler. Some great, great 90s names right there joining Train as well, too.
You know, he said this album is kind of going back to some of his roots and his early stuff, both sonically and musically, and certainly bringing in Jewel and Blues Traveler. We're going to be transported back to parts of our childhood with it. So
yeah, that's a big time vibe. I know you can get into that, too. Awesome connecting with Pat. Look forward to featuring them in the band more. Hey, who knows? Maybe we even tee it up there one day when we're in Austin. It sounds like he's looking for someone to join him, so hopefully we'll make that happen. But again, subscribe if you like that interview or anything else coming up from Course of Life and our podcast. We love having new fans all the time. We love hearing your feedback, so subscribe wherever you are listening.
All right, let's talk a little basketball. Let's get on the Celtics bandwagon, Alex. How are we feeling? How are we feeling here?
Well, I mean, by the time this week's episode airs, there's a lot up in the air because we're playing the defending champions, and when you're playing the Bucks, they don't mess around. So it's basically the Greek Freak and Company versus the Celtics. Still have it in my head that we're going seven games, so I'm mentally prepared for a seven-game series as game four is just concluded. The bottom line is this is a year where the Celtics could actually steal a championship, which is why I'm a little bit more invested than the average NBA season. The field's just not that weak this year, Mike. In case you didn't realize, LeBron James and the Lakers missed the playoffs. Like there's a lot of different things going on in the NBA this year. So hopefully the Celtics can seize the moment in this series coming up this week.
We'll keep an eye on it, and maybe we'll be all happy and go lucky next week. We'll see. But in the meantime, let's hashtag always end with food.
Yes, brought to you by Toasty Bites, makers of Toasty Bites and Super Pops, very healthy on-the-go snacks. Promo code COL20 at toasty.com/COL. My always end with food for the past week took me to a Midwest fast food staple. There's only one or two in Central Texas, but fortunately there's one not too far away from where I am. And I'm talking about Culver's, Mike. Have you ever been to a Culver's before?
You know, I've not. I never heard of them until one opened here in the Savannah metro area a couple of years ago. I have yet to go yet, but I know they're there. I know where they are.
It's a good burger taste test for you, since I know you've tried them all. Their specialty are the butter burgers, just nice, buttery, juicy patties laid on thick with all the toppings. They do amazing, amazing chicken tender meals. And you're not going to believe this. Nowhere else in the world do I go to a fast food place and order a Reuben sandwich. But I do that at Culver's because their Reuben is surprisingly good. So it's a sleeper of a menu. And obviously, since you're Midwest style, don't forget the cheese curds. But highly recommend Culver's if you're ever driving by it on the highway.
I'll have to check them out sometime soon. But in the meantime, for me, for food, I think it's time to make a life announcement. I know everyone's been waiting for me to open my own bakery, and
we have.
That's not happening now.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Sorry, but I am now. I am spending part of my time every day baking bread in a bakery.
Oh wow! You're getting paid for it. This is amazing.
I am. I know.
Testing the tools of the trade, fine, and honing your craft at this point, right?
Yeah. A little bit of a career shift going back to what I find that I really enjoy and am passionate about. And it's, you know, when you're making bread or anything like that, you're creating something with your hands from raw things and making something that brings joy in people's lives. Because when you have really good bread or anything that's been baked, it really just, it's life changing. It really can be.
I love it. We're going to get that live Tales from the Kitchen now on Always End with Food as we hear you baking away. I am curious. I got to ask, though. Now, if you're in a bakery, that sleep schedule, how's that? What's that sleep schedule looking like now? I think things have changed now, haven't they?
Well, so only one morning, and only one morning am I there super early to bake the bread. The rest of the time I'm there kind of middle of the day, help support the bread team doing our pre-shape and our shaping of our loaves. So only one day a week am I there at 4 a.m.
Oh, wow. What's the alarm looking like on that day of the week?
The alarm's at 3. And so it's been a struggle so far.
What's going on in the world?
Not much. There's a surprising number of people that are out there on the road at 3:30 a.m. Let me tell you, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, I wonder what they were doing all night. Huh, I can't imagine.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, you know, other than that, it's pretty quiet. It's usually pretty dark that time of day, too.
Yeah, that does sound about right. Okay, good to know. Still dark at 3 a.m. Okay, well, good luck with the morning shift and the revised sleep schedule as well, too. I'm looking forward to the Tales from the Kitchen upcoming.
Yeah, you'll get them.
Awesome. That's a wrap on this week's Course of Life. If you like that week's guests, who knows? There's more coming next week that could just be bigger. So be sure you smash that subscribe button. Stay tuned for next week. Until then, we'll see you next week.